Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Happy Easter, everyone. Those celebrating. Final day of Passover. This is the rare year when the end of Passover happens on the same day as Eastern and Western Easter.
And both Easters coincide with each other.
Right.
Yeah.
It has me very upset, by the way.
Because you can't get the discounts on the candy.
Well, you know, I've... Normally, the Eastern Orthodox Easter, Greek Easter, as we celebrate in my family, is the week after. So you can, you know, go to the store and get the Easter candy half price. But that's not...
That's not going to happen this year.
Not going to happen this year. I left a pause for my late mother in my head to go, that's not funny.
I was thinking about that very thing.
Stop
earlier
that
this
joke.
Morning.
That joke is not funny. Stop telling that
You can
joke.
Still get the candy at a discount tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow, but Easter is today.
But save it for next year.
Oh, that'd even be better, yeah.
Why not just wait and get some Halloween candy?
Go.
It'll be on the shelves tomorrow.
Well, that's probably
yes,
true.
It will.
That is probably true.
You're going to start seeing 4th of July things here very soon.
708 area code starts the show off today. Dean, remember your dear mom did not like you joking about getting the Easter candy on sale.
There you go.
No, she did not. She did not think that was funny.
I think she called you every time to tell you, stop telling that joke.
She would call me, but when I would, you know, when we get together to have Easter later in the
she'd
day.
She'd say, why did you say that?
I heard you say that. You know that's not funny. You say that every year. It's not funny. It's like, it's a little bit funny. And now look, I have requests for it. Crazy. This is interesting. 708 area code. How long has Dean Richards and Dave Schwann been on WGN Radio on Sunday morning together?
This makes about 14 and a half years.
Wow.
I know. Wow.
That's nice.
Came back to work here in 2005.
Yeah.
And then we were on together, you know, on and off between 2005 and then 10. And then Don Norton, who was the Sunday morning anchor.
Wore a tie every day.
Wore a tie and a suit.
More respectful than some other people in our newsroom now.
So when Don...
Fresh, sharp. You know, I did have a boss once at WCFL.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? Super CFL?
Sure.
You worked there, too.
That was our first of three radio stations together. Yes.
I had a boss there that said, if you dress sharp, you think sharp.
Yeah.
And he wanted us.
I think I know who said that.
I was working at night. Not a soul was in the building. Nobody. Me and the newsman. And
the engineers.
And the engineer, right. We had engineers and producers.
Mm-hmm.
But there were like four of us. Each one's sloppier than the next. But my boss insisted that I wear a tie suit.
You know, I don't recall you wearing a tie, though.
All the time.
Because I would come in for the overnight shift,
yeah,
and I would see you, and you'd be done when you'd be leaving.
Right.
And I don't recall seeing you with a tie, though.
Well, I did a slow
strip. Of course, that was 4 years ago now?
I did a slow strip during the show.
Oh, man.
With every Madonna song we played, I took one piece of clothing off. No, I had a if I didn't show up with a coat and tie, you would be. It's like when you go to I don't even know if they still have restaurants like this, but when there are restaurants where there's a dress code, and if you don't have the proper clothing, they have clothing for you to put on.
And have you ever in some cases? The jackets are not all that appealing.
No, and they're stinky.
Yeah, they're old. And
Yeah, they're not good.
But you must wear a jacket in the dining room.
Right. That makes all the difference for the dining experience. You know, I had a restaurant once. I forget where it was. Somewhere in Chicago. They wouldn't let me in because I was wearing gym shoes.
Oh, man.
Nice gym shoes.
Did they have shoes for you to wear? Yes,
no.
Like bowling shoes where you'd go get a pair of bowling shoes?
They'd spray the shoes and give them to you?
There you go.
No, they just wouldn't let me in. This was back in the day where, you know, like you would wear gym shoes with a suit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a la David Letterman. I thought I was being David Letterman. Like, I look at me, I'm cool like David Letterman. I'm wearing gym shoes with my, you know, suit. And the guy said, you can't come in like that. You have to be dressed properly. And I was like, these shoes cost more than your whole wardrobe. Hell, I got news for you.
So did you end up leaving?
I wound up leaving.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Now, I got called out on not wearing a coat, but the shoes were okay.
Yeah.
So.
Did anyone object to your I voted sticker that you were wearing?
I didn't have my coat. It wasn't on it.
Oh, it wasn't. Okay, that makes sense. Well, it's a lovely morning for Easter morning, right?
The rain is holding off, yes. We may have some rain this afternoon.
Nah.
Higher winds, but it's mild, you know, mid-50s.
Lovely.
For a high. 60 tomorrow. We could be in the 70s here midweek again.
It's lovely.
Finally getting some spring-like weather.
Very, very nice. And you have big Easter plans for today?
I'm going to my cousin's for dinner.
It's Cousin D.
Cousin D. A shout out to D and Rick. I'll be there later.
She's been
I hope they have peeps.
She's been on our Tree Time show. She always comes out to our Tree Time show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so people know D.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Andy, you have Passover plans for today?
I might order a pizza.
Nice.
Sweet. Oh, yeah, it's been a long week.
just the way the ancient scrolls dictate.
Tell you what, that was in the 15 commandments. That's the one that Mel Brooks dropped.
Thou must have pepperoni and cheese.
Exactly.
Ooh, that would be good right now, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes.
Nice pizza right now.
I'll take it.
Going to my brother's today. We're going to have a nice Easter dinner. I offered to help cook.
Oh, I would think that would be, you know, mandatory, apropos, as they say. Mandatory.
Mandatory.
Yeah. I was saying apropos, but mandatory is...
You're fancy like that.
Okay.
My nephew wants to cook the whole dinner. He also likes to cook. And he said, no, Uncle Dean, I want to do it myself. So,
is lamb involved with this?
Probably.
Okay.
I didn't go into the details of the menu with him, but normally we'd have a lamb, we have ham. There'll probably be one of those Greek pastizos, you know, the Greek lasagna. Probably be one of those. What else? Yeah, you know, a whole variety of... We have a very multi-ethnic, multicultural family, so we have, you know, lots of different things. I am making my deviled eggs.
Wait a minute, no. Your mother's.
Critically acclaimed.
It's my mother's.
Your mother's deviled eggs.
It's my mother's recipe for the deviled eggs.
That sounds so good, though, when you were describing the, you know, the recipe and how you made them.
Yeah, it's too bad you couldn't have had any.
Well, you know, I'm kind of getting used to that now. That I never included.
A better friend would have brought a few.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I haven't had a deviled egg I didn't like, though.
You know what? Maybe when we hit the 35-year mark. Something to shoot for.
Well, end of the year, it'll be 15 that we've been on the program together.
On this program?
On this program, right.
Because we've been on other shows on other stations.
Yes.
Together.
Yes. Yes, and how you've made fun of me and ridiculed
me. Every single one.
Every single time.
Every single station. Up and down the dial, AM, FM.
AM, FM, didn't matter.
Short wave.
Didn't matter.
Pretend.
Voice
of America. Amateur radio. We still need to do the show from our cars with CB radios.
Breaker, breaker. Schwani, you got your ears up.
Can you still buy a CB?
I'm sure you can.
I bet you can, yeah.
Yeah. Citizens Band Radio?
I imagine you can.
Let's see.
Just put it out. We'll get a text sooner or later about it.
Band Radio. Yep. Turns out you sure can.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. $149 at Home Depot.
That's not bad.
That's the Cobra 75 all-road CB.
Ah. Cobra.
Antenna included, I hope.
Oh, I don't know, but that's the what's the use of having a CB radio if you don't have the big whip antenna?
Now, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Now, I really would love to see a picture of the Dean Mobile,
my 68 from Tempest.
It's a 68 Tempest with the whip antenna the back that just curves around. Or did it was it spring loaded where it would move in the wind?
It was I want to say. No, it didn't move in the wind, but it was attached to the back bumper, and then you pulled it up toward your rear window, and there was like a little hook. So,
it rests in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, if you wanted to let it fly, you could, but most of the time you didn't.
Did you ever lose an antenna in a car wash?
How about a parking garage?
A parking garage, yeah. Too?
Yeah. Scraping the ceiling.
That would have broken my heart. That was my pride and joy. Oh, you can get a Uniden CB radio on Amazon for $55.
Hmm.
You know, that would be worth, getting three of them for us.
Yeah.
Then we could chat all week long.
How? Oh, my.
Breaker, Schwani, are you there? How's your high voltage sticker?
Have to brush up on our 10 signals.
Our 10 codes.
10 talk, yeah.
And my dad used to let me breaker 19 for a 1036.
Ooh, I don't know what that
is. That was a time check, if I remember correctly.
1036?
You get on there and say it's 1036.
No, you say breaker, I need a 1036.
Oh, and somebody would tell you what time it is?
It's 9:25.
Wow.
That was my introduction to CB radio. Asking what time it was, even though we knew.
I used to know all that
that's
stuff.
You know what? That's going to be our code from now on the show.
For look it up checks. To make sure that's right still, but I think
were
that
we
was
talking
what it was.
10 code?
10 code, yeah.
Okay. No other radio show does that.
It's true.
There may be a reason no other radio
I was just
going to
say
that. All right, coming up, we're going to get into our week in health segment. We've got a special segment today talking about Alzheimer's, talking about brain health. There are some new programs that the Alzheimer's Association of Illinois are unveiling right now that I thought a lot of you would find very interesting. I know I find this more and more interesting. I was just reading an article about how dementia and Alzheimer's, the rates of people who are affected by this are increasing every single day. It's something that we should be paying attention to. So we'll devote the health segment to that today. On our Week in Theater segment today, we're going to be talking with B.J. Jones, longtime artistic director of Northlight Theater Company. So they get ready to make a move to a brand new location. And we have the star and the director of the number one movie in America, this incredible film Sinners, that has just opened in theaters all over the world, really. Coming up, director Ryan Coogler. And the great Michael B. Jordan will be joining us.
Hey, it's Lisa Dent. WGN's been around a while, but we're on the cutting edge, too. Make us the first button on your car's digital dashboard. We'll show you how at WGNradio.com.
It's 50 degrees and partly sunny at 9:30. Good morning. I'm Dave Schwann. The news is sponsored by Peck Ritchie, Attorneys at Law. Pope Francis limits his activity this Easter weekend. In sports, we have the Cubs in Arizona once again today at 1:20. Cubs beat the Diamondbacks yesterday 6-2. White Sox playing Boston again this afternoon. Sox losing to the Red Sox 4-3 yesterday. And in the Stanley Cup playoffs, three games, New Jersey at Carolina, Ottawa at Toronto, and Minnesota playing Vegas. WGN traffic, just one item to report. It's on the Kennedy stop and go outbound between Ontario and Sacramento. The rest of the expressways and tollways moving well. Pope Francis made a surprise visit to St. Peter's Basilica last night, arriving in his wheelchair, stopping to pray at St. Peter's tomb before the Easter vigil on Saturday night. He also greeted those in attendance before returning to his residence. He delegated two cardinals to preside over Easter Mass today and has kept mostly out of the public eye since his release from the hospital last month, where he was fighting double pneumonia. Four people were killed after a small plane crash 60 miles south of Champaign, Illinois, near the town of Trilla yesterday. The FAA continues to investigate. They have confirmed two men and two women were aboard. It was a Cessna 180. Preliminary information showed the plane hitting power lines before it crashed into a field. Tornadoes are causing damage near Fort Worth. Images posted on social media show large tornadoes near the Texas town of Weatherford, and also residents in the city of Jacksboro revealed damage left behind by severe winds, possibly a tornado. But a tornado was confirmed near the town of Toller. Several homes were damaged, trees knocked down, but no injuries reported so far. A teenager was shot and killed in Englewood overnight. Chicago police were on patrol when witnesses waved them down near South Green and 72nd. Officers found a 16-year-old boy with a number of gunshot wounds. No word on what led to this shooting, and no one is in custody. The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center: increasing clouds today, a chance of some rain, high in the mid-50s. Mostly cloudy overnight with showers and storms, a low of 54. Clouds moving on and off for tomorrow, and some rain as well, but tapering off in the afternoon and a high near 60. We now have at O'Hare 50, 52 at Midway, 46 along the lake. I'm Dave Schwann, WGN News. Next news when it happens. Next scheduled news at 10 o'clock.
Oh, I'll bet Aunt B put on a nice Easter spread in the dining room.
It's going to be extra good.
Barney invited over Howard Sprague.
Yes, that's right. They may even have Otis and Ernest T. Bass join them.
The Darlins. Play us an Easter song, Paul.
Don't play that one. That makes me cry.
It's the new segment on the show, jokes that only Schwanee and I understand.
What would Aunt B cook? Do you think a big Easter ham?
Oh, she'd make a nice big Easter ham. And
with sweet potatoes?
Taters.
That's right. That's the way Mr. Darling would call them. Taters.
Homemade biscuits with honey. Again, you've been listening to jokes
And then Andy and Barney will be on the porch going, I think I'll go get me a bottle of pop. Want to go downtown, get a bottle of pop?
Ange.
And then I'm going to go over to Thelma Lou's and watch a little TV.
I think I'm going to sit here and strum on the guitar while poor Aunt B, who's been slaving all day in the kitchen, makes some homemade ice cream with a hand crank.
That was Opie's duty.
Keep working, woman.
That was Opie's big job, making the homemade ice cream.
Andy, you still awake?
We now join the Dean Richards program, already in progress.
And again, our new segment, Jokes That Only Schwanee and Dean
Understand. It's now time for a 10:36. Yes. It is 9:35.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our rambling on about nothing to bring you this week's far-flung forecast. Here he is now. Floyd the Barber Schwann.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, it's a nice forecast.
It's a wonderful forecast.
Far-flung forecast.
Everything is okay in Mayberry. Actually,
we've been in the peeps.
We have an historic, monumental landmark far-flung forecast today.
Fancy.
We head to the New England portion of the United States, to Lexington, Massachusetts.
Oh, I think I know where this is going.
It's only 10 miles from downtown Boston, population of 34,000, goes back to 1642. But 250 years ago yesterday, the shot heard round the world took place there. One of the first Battles of the American Revolutionary War, taking place in the Battle of Lexington and nearby Concord. Concord, Massachusetts. The beginning of a battle that went on for about 9 years, the beginning of the American Revolution. They had a reenactment yesterday in the area, but it was 250 years ago yesterday when that took place. That means next year is going to be the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence.
Of democracy in America?
Yes. Mm. And, Dean, you may remember the 200th anniversary, 1976.
Well, I wasn't there, but...
No, the anniversary, 200 years, 1976.
Oh, the, yeah.
Bicentennial.
The bicentennial, yeah. Sure.
So this is a bisesquicentennial or something like that.
Huh?
I'm going to have to come up with a name for the 250th anniversary. You know, 150 is sesquicentennial.
Mm-hmm.
You seem interested.
I like the words.
Okay. But
sounds frisky.
Lexington, Massachusetts, home of the shot heard round the world 250 years ago. Yesterday, a sunny day today and a high of 56.
All right. All right. Let's get to the weekend health. And we continue now with the weekend health. Very important new initiative is being launched by the Alzheimer's Association of Illinois. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about that and where we are in the very cruel disease of Alzheimer's. Joining us on the phone line is Olivia Matongo, who is the Vice President of Programs for the Alzheimer's Association Illinois Chapter. Olivia, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you
with
us.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for being here and keeping us up to date on this. I was reading something earlier this morning about how number of cases of people with Alzheimer's, with dementia, with brain health are increasing all the time. So these kinds of programs and treatments, research being done, et cetera, more and more important. Talk to us a little bit about the Illinois Brain Health Project. What is that exactly?
This is an innovative and exciting campaign that we worked on very closely with the Illinois Department of Public Health, but also other local community organizations to really raise awareness on brain health. And historically, I'll say that our messaging has always been to older adults around Alzheimer's and dementia, but we are in an exciting space where we're learning that there's things that you can do right now, regardless of how old you are, to take care of your brain. And we want to get that information out to the masses across the state of Illinois, especially in those communities that are high risk, that don't have a lot of resources. We want people to know you can start to take care of your brain now, because we do know that we're living longer, and I feel like everybody wants to live well longer. So start to take care of yourself and your brain now. It's so important for us to share this message with everyone.
I have no scientific basis for this next statement, but it seems like more and more people at much, much younger ages are being affected by early stage Alzheimer's, by they're being diagnosed with something regarding their brain at much earlier ages. It's just my observation of people that I run into. Is that true?
It is. You know, I think that there's a lot that's happening. People are becoming more aware. There's more testing that's taking place, and we're beginning to really understand how many people are truly impacted. And that's why these programs are so essential. People need to understand what they need to do because it's all around early detection, correct? If you're able to address something quickly, you're able to navigate things a little bit better as you continue to progress down that journey. So, yes, I think that we are truly in a space where we're learning more. Awareness is much higher than it's ever been. And so we're trying to get into these communities to take care of people that need our help.
Yeah. What are the red flags? Because people say all the time, oh, I'm worried I'm going to get Alzheimer's. I went into the next room and then I forgot why I went into the next room. Or I can't remember, you know, where I put my car keys or, you know, something like that. Are those red flags or are there situations that are much more serious with regard to memory loss?
Yes, they are. You know, I'll name just a few. You know, one that is something that you should, you know, think about going to your doctor is a memory loss that is disrupting your daily life. You know, when you are forgetting important dates or events, asking the same questions over and over, having to rely on memory aids, that's a time when you probably want to be able to check in with your physician and see, is there something wrong? Is there something happening? Or confusion with place and time. You go to the grocery store, you're not able to figure out how to get back home. That is something that you should certainly take a look into. Ask a professional for extra help and guidance. Challenges planning or solving problems, things that you were able to do before, Dean, you're not able to do now, like balancing your checkbook. Absolutely look into what might be happening with you when some of those things are happening. Yeah.
Yeah, you had said that this Illinois Brain Health Project helps to identify high-risk patients. What is high risk? Are there certain lifestyles? Are there certain demographics? Who and what are high risk?
The Black community is high risk. You know, they are two times as likely to develop Alzheimer's or another form of dementia versus the white community. Hispanics as well are at high risk. They're 1.5 times more likely. And then we know that people that are in rural communities, they don't have access to a lot of resources. You know, there are places, you know, in central and southern Illinois that probably don't even have Wi-Fi. So people aren't able to educate themselves as well as maybe people in more urban areas. So we need to be in those places, really holding people's hands and guiding them and raising awareness. So we know that those are the communities that we need to have that special focus on, the Black community, Hispanic, and rural communities.
Let me take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more. I want to learn more of what the Illinois Brain Health Project is doing specifically. I want to get to some of the questions that are being called in and texted in. 312-981-7200 next.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
9:51, it's Dean Richards. Sunday morning on WGN, our weekend health segment. This week with Olivia Mutungo, Vice President of Programs for the Alzheimer's Association of Illinois and their Illinois Brain Health Project. Olivia, what specifically does the project do?
It is connecting anyone that is curious about brain health to resources. When you visit the website, you're able to see all of the different activities that you can start to do to take care of your brain. When you click to learn more, it connects you to a repository of resources. So you're able to start to educate yourself, learn a little bit more about what you can start to do today to take care of your brain. We are hoping to build this out more. Well, we'll have recipes and videos and demonstrations. But for now, it's really a nice place for you to start to learn about what you can do today.
Yeah, sort of an all-in-one resource stop, it sounds like, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned recipes. Are there foods and certain foods which are better or worse for brain health?
Well, you know, that's a really good question because I was recently taking a wonderful course that was focused around brain health and the types of foods that we want to consider. And, you know, berries are something that, you know, I learned are a wonderful resource for brain health. So with your breakfast, you know, consider including blackberries, blueberries, strawberries. They're absolutely wonderful. Of course, lean meat, such as your chicken, your turkey, and your fish. Those are things that you want to incorporate as well. We always want to recommend a really nice EVOO, so that's olive oil. You want to make sure that you're eating your nuts. You know, so they are foods that you want to gravitate towards that will help you along the journey of taking care of your brain.
847 area code says, I have been in an Alzheimer's study via Rush Hospital and the Alzheimer's Association for 3 years. I was given a genetic marker test, which predicts the likelihood or of not getting Alzheimer's or not. Can your guest tell us about this genetic marker test?
Yes. So what is happening now is, I believe they're speaking about APOE4. This has really been exciting, and I think the study that they're probably on is U.S. Pointer. This is part of the benefit of being in this study. You are able to be connected with one of our clinics that's a part of the study, Rush or Advocate. You get this test. It lets you know, you know, whether or not you have this. And I think that's really great for anybody that's along this journey, because it puts you in a position to either ramp up, get ready, or continue doing what you're doing. So it, I think science has moved really far and beyond to a place where we're really able to equip people with as much information as possible. So yes, they're probably on U.S. Pointer, and they were able to get that test done and position themselves for, you know, what the future looks like for them.
Which leads me to the question, is Alzheimer's or dementia something which can be inherited? In other words, if you have, you know, family members who have it, are you likely to also have Alzheimer's or dementia?
We are still doing research on that, Dean. We are seeing that family history might impact you getting it, or genetics, but it's not 100%. So yes, you might have family members that have Alzheimer's and dementia, but that doesn't mean that you will. But I think if you are surrounded by family members that are navigating this difficult disease, then you absolutely want to make sure that you're looking into the new Illinois Brain Health Project, learning about what you should be doing right now so that you can potentially reduce your risk. We know that it's possible. So that's exciting.
Yeah, well, my reason for asking is that if you have family members, you know, and that might make you genetically predisposed to it, then you really want to take advantage of the Illinois Brain Health Project. And by the way, I'm going to give the website for that in a moment. So if you want to stand by to write that down, but also this genetic marker test, if you are, you know, come from a family with that, then you want to see if you're headed down that path so you could be a little more active, maybe the marker test is for you as well. 847 area code, can you ask your guest about the correlation between high stress and Alzheimer's? Is there a connection between high stress and Alzheimer's?
Yeah, there is. You know, any time that you're putting yourself under any sort of stress, you know, our bodies react, especially over a period of time. Your body will respond to that high stress environment and will trigger certain things, you know, regarding your health. So you do always want to make sure that you're taking care of yourself, making sure you're getting enough rest, making sure that you are always thinking about your overall well-being so that you are not stressing yourself and then potentially exposing yourself to the things that might begin to take you down that path. So yes, that does impact you in a way.
Okay. If you want to learn more about the Illinois Brain Health Project, you can go to yourbrainwillthankyou.com. Yourbrainwillthankyou.com. Olivia, I thank you. Olivia Mutongo, Vice President, Programs, Illinois Alzheimer's Association. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk with you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, breaker.
10:36. It is 10:06 and 42 seconds.
10:04.
Roger that.
10:04.
That's a firm.
I looked up the 10 code.
Yeah. Was that right?
10 code radio communication guide developed in 1937. Expanded in 1974. The 10 codes remain in effect today.
I used to know all of them.
Let me see here. What did you say it was?
10:36.
10:36. Need correct time.
There you go. Yeah.
10:20, I believe, is your location. What's your 20?
Yeah, what's your 20?
What's your 20?
Yeah. What's your 20? 10:12, visitors present.
Okay.
What else do we have here? 10:23, stand by.
Oh.
We should use that way more often on this show. Please stand by.
10:23.
You use that about every 5 minutes.
Please stand by. 10:39, your message has been delivered. Oh, here's a good one. 10:73, speed trap at.
Ooh.
So you would say, 10:73 at Michigan and
a
Rainbow.
Certain location. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, one of these mornings we'll do the whole show in 10 code.
10:04.
And while everybody else is doing podcasts, we're going to start up an all CB show.
10 cast.
A 10 cast.
The 10:36 is now 10:08.
I'm going to use the 10:100.
Oh, I think I know that one.
Do you know what 10:100 is?
I think you have to go to the bathroom.
You have to go to the bathroom. 20, what could they be talking about with one toke over the line?
Oh, let me think.
Far out, man. Far out.
Out of sight.
Happy 420.
420.
It's the day associated with... It's Weed Day. How ironic that we should have
Easter,
Passover, and Weed Day.
Weed Day. Day.
All on the same day. The day that... how this got started exactly at 420. I found a few theories on this, but what I also found very interesting now is that 88% of U.S. adults believe that recreational or medical marijuana should be legal. Which we found out here on the show, remember not too long
ago? Yeah, a little while ago, yeah.
I forget what we were talking about, but basically
we found out. We got talking on this subject and everybody wrote in talking about it.
We found out if you like this show, you must be on drugs.
Simple deduction, right?
Is that a 10-4?
10-100.
10.
Still 10-100.
Yeah, I know. There is a 10-100 in the works here.
We, turns out a lot of people, not just the crazy hippies are the ones token up, as they say, are smoking the doob, the devil's weed. A lot of people who listen use marijuana regularly. So, happy 420 to you.
Medicinal purposes or recreational?
Oh, we got a lot of glaucoma on the show, Schwani.
Tons of it.
We're overrun with glaucoma on the show. I think medicinal. People use it for pain relief.
They have, yes.
It's more than just getting high, but... That is one side effect. 24 states plus the District of Columbia and Guam have legalized marijuana for recreational use.
I think it's been, 3 years here, 4 years?
Something like that.
Since it was legal in Illinois?
Yeah, there's dispensaries everywhere now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But how did 420 become the day? That's the question. I looked it up this morning.
It was Colorado, I think. Started it?
Well, there are lots of different theories. One says they go back to the Bob Dylan song "Rainy Day Women," 12 and 35.
Okay,
12 multiplied by 35 equals 420. I don't know. Another story goes back to a high school. This might be the Colorado thing that you're talking about. A high school in Colorado, the students would meet at 4:20 p.m. by the campus's play yard, and they would toke up. Is that what you say now?
I don't know. I don't think they...
My jargon is so 1960s on this. Swanee, what do you say? You hang out at the dispensary.
Oh, thanks a lot.
All the time.
Thanks a lot.
You're wearing tie-dye.
Now we need a lava lamp on the show, right?
Yeah, there's a million different theories. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought something took place in Colorado where they were among the first states that at least decriminalized it.
And,
yeah.
But I think 420 was before that happened.
It may have been, yeah. Yeah.
If I know my marijuana history, and I like to think I do.
We'll get a texter in or a caller that will know.
Well, all of our listeners are too high to even...
Come on now.
Here's the 773 area code, saying that 420 came from a California statute. Came from a California statute. I don't know. You could also... Oh, you could use the Tenkos too. But somebody said that came from a California statute. That's how we got 420 from this.
Not Colorado. California. The statute in California. That's right.
630 says it's because 420 is Hitler's birthday. What does that have to do with... It is Hitler's birthday, but what does that have to do with marijuana?
I have no idea.
Let's see. Oh, here's a... This is... 630 area code. This actually makes sense. That says it's the police code for... We've got a 420, meaning marijuana possession.
Huh.
That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense.
Somebody texted in saying they're getting a contact high from listening to this segment right now. Our listeners are so nutty. 847 area code. I love explaining to my young kids what that horrible smell is. Have you been... I notice it sometimes on the expressway.
Oh, I notice it everywhere.
I'm driving on the expressway. You're going 55 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you get that... I agree, it's a horrible smell. I've never liked the way that it smelled. But isn't that weird that you can get it on the highway when you're going so fast? If you go...
How so?
If you go to New York, you may as well have a bag of Fritos with you at all time. That's all you smell on the streets of New York now, is somebody smoking the weed.
Now, how do you...
As you kids like to put
well,
it.
Well, now, how do you notice it on the expressway, though?
I smell it in my car.
In your car?
Yeah.
It
comes through the vent.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Which means other cars are using it.
Partaking, yes.
That's yeah.
Right.
Hmm.
That's right. Somebody said here, 224, it smells like a skunk. Yes, it does. It does. Smells just like a skunk. That's exactly right.
It's very prevalent on the L trains.
Yeah.
Very prevalent.
And from Schwanee's apartment.
No. I was on the Orange Line once.
I'll bet you were.
Coming back from Midway.
Is that what you stoners call it? I was on the Orange Line, man.
What's the 10 signal, Andy, for be quiet?
I don't think there is
what
one.
What is for please be quiet? or let me finish.
Please continue.
But I was on the orange line, and two guys got on and just lit up.
Lit right up. Sweet, man.
And promptly, you know, the whole car just, you know, absolutely smelled like it. That.
Hey, man. Hey, was that the Belmont stop we just went by, man?
Not on the orange line. It didn't.
Yeah.
One.
Change in Roosevelt, man. It's for all of our stoner listeners today.
Jefferson Airplane and White Rabbit.
No.
Grace Slick.
Gracie Slick, man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say man a lot because.
Man, yeah.
Makes me feel more.
Hey, man.
Okay,
more
man.
More druggy.
All right, man.
Can I just tell you something?
We sure, man.
Talking about this?
Sure, man.
Man.
Out of sight, man.
Our text line has blown up.
Groovy.
I'm telling you, we have the biggest bunch of stoners listening to the show. It's like the biggest surprise to me when we first discovered this, I don't know, a year ago or something?
A year or two ago, yeah.
But every time we bring this up, the phone lines explode. What are you people doing out there on Sunday morning?
It's Sunday.
708 area code, Dean, every store parking lot smells of weed.
Yeah.
Every parking lot, period.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, I've noticed that too. But the engineer, to continue my story before I was interrupted.
Please.
When I'm riding the orange line, the train, the engineer stopped the train, came into the car and got the guys off the car, told them to leave.
Oh.
They did. There was not a problem, but... Yeah.
Wow.
Got him off the train.
Oh, you youngsters are going to have to leave this train car.
You can't smoke at all, though. I mean,
you can't smoke marijuana on my train car.
Marijuana.
Mary Jane.
Suddenly, I want to do the show by blacklight with... crazy. Well, that's all I have to say on this subject.
10-4.
You have anything else to add?
10-4. 10-10.
Again, I'll repeat 10-100. Text Dean Richards Sunday morning at 312-981-7200. This is Bob from Evanston. Good morning. You're on WGN. Hi, Bob.
Hey there, guys. I really enjoy your show every Sunday morning,
Thank
Dean.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, absolutely. And, of course, my name is Bob. And I'm calling to share with you, ironically, I was just rolling listening to you guys earlier. Not that I know anything about it, of course, but if I were to have gone into a marijuana shop after marijuana became legalized in Illinois, it's hilarious. No exaggeration. 3/4 of the people in there are middle-aged or older.
Ah.
I mean, it's just amazing.
Very
not
revealing.
That I know anything about it personally.
Naturally,
course,
you know, right? Naturally, this is your. It was strictly scientific research.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it's interesting. It really is. I mean, and what's even more ironic is you think when they finally legalized marijuana, which they should have done a long time ago, you really realize how futile and senseless it was to. You know, lock up all those people for all those years.
So many people that wound up in jail with criminal records and worse for what, really?
Smoking a joint, for God's sake. Come on.
I wonder, you say they're middle-aged or above in the dispensaries. I wonder if it's because that, you know, was the boomer generation that grew up on it, or I wonder if it's because of medicinal reasons. Seriously, people using it for glaucoma, for pain relief, for, you know, a variety of reasons. I wonder.
My speculation, again, this is my speculation, not that I would know anything personally about it, of course.
Naturally.
That these are folks who are boomers and other folks who have, you know, realized that it was, you know, no big deal.
Not that big of a deal. All right, I have to, Bob, I want to share this with you. I got a text here from the 773. Dean, my favorite is you played the song One Toke Over the Line a minute ago. But my favorite is when the Lawrence Welk Show featured the song, because Sweet Jesus is mentioned in the song, and they did not understand the overall meaning of the song because of it. I have never heard this, so let's give this just a quick listen here.
Let's listen to Gail and Dale and one of the newer songs.
One toke over the line, sweet Jesus, one toke over the line.
Wow, how about
sitting
that?
Downtown in a railway station, one toke over the line.
How about that on the Lawrence Welk Show?
A little they know, huh?
Oh, man. I have never heard this before.
Oh, man. I love your show. This is a great set.
I'm going to love it. Bob, have a great day today. Happy Easter to you.
And you too, guys. Thanks a lot, buddy.
You very much.
I didn't hear Lawrence Welk go, and a one and a two.
And now let's hear a song about the evil weed. Take it away, Myron Florin on the accordion now.
The final episode had the Lennon sisters doing it in four-part harmony.
Oh, I would love that so much. That's the greatest.
Myron Florin.
And now we'll do the polka to One Toke Over the Line. Coming up, we've got the stars of the number one movie in America, Michael B. Jordan and his cast joining us on our A-list interview today. Just a little follow-up on our new segment here on the Sunday show, Weed Talk.
Yeah.
847 area code says, just walk past the construction site at the old Thompson Center. You will get a contact high. 847, my husband and I never used marijuana growing up. We're in our 60s, and we both use gummies now to help us sleep. It's been great for us.
Okay.
It's good to know.
All right.
At 317 area code, we live in Northwest Indiana, and we get coupons in the mail for dispensaries in Michigan.
Hmm. You will see signs advertising dispensaries on the Indiana Toll Road.
Oh, well, you see dispensaries everywhere.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Yeah.
630 area code, Dean, I'm a boomer. My husband and I have visited dispensaries. Pain relief is the only reason why. Yeah, see, I know that's, it's not just, you know, getting high. It's, there are a lot of truly medicinal reasons now.
Yes. Yep.
708 area code says, once they legalized it, I lost interest in it. It's not as much fun anymore. Sunday morning, it's all things entertainment for you, and that includes The Weekend Theater. What is going on stage in Chicago? We'll cover a couple of different areas this week. One, the brand-new play that has reopened, I guess you might say, the Victory Gardens Theater. Victory Gardens Theater on Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. It used to be a small theater on Lincoln Avenue. Then they took over the old Biograph Theater, the historic Biograph. And then they went dark for a while. You know, COVID hit, lots of different financial factors took place. But they are back up and running now with a premiere of the new David Mamet play that's called Henry Johnson, and stars, among others, Thomas Gibson, who you may remember as Greg from Dharma and Greg. You may remember from the TV drama Criminal Minds. He's been in lots of television shows and motion pictures. Thomas Gibson has been here in Chicago for the past several weeks rehearsing. The play is now up and running, and it will be going until May the 4th. And on our WGN Midday News on Channel 9 this past week, Thomas stopped by and we had a nice chat about his new play, Henry Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are now officially opened in Chicago.
That's right.
And first time, right, on the Chicago stage.
On the boards here in Chicago, yes. And I am very excited to be here because I've always loved Chicago. some of my favorite people in the world are from Chicago, and you know the Chicago acting sort of reputation is you know fantastic. So, you know, I called Joe Mantegna when I got a call from Eddie and Dan about doing the play, and he said, "Doing a Mammoth play in Chicago? What are you calling me for?" So, yeah, you know, yeah. it was great.
It's a natural. And now that rehearsals are over and you're up and running, maybe they'll actually enjoy the city a little bit as well.
Exactly.
Tell us about Henry Johnson. What is it about?
So we follow Henry through very sort of important moments in his life. And the first one is in the corporate world. And he is advocating for a friend. He's got a friend who's been in trouble, and he is asking a superior at his office for a job for his friend who's been to prison. And then things don't go exactly as Henry has planned, and we then see Henry in prison in the second scene with his cellmate Gene, who I get to play. And, you know, in the best tradition of Mamet, it's all about the politics of compassion, the gray areas of morality, when self-interest becomes, you know, what you are more interested in than being sympathetic to someone. So
yeah.
It's, you know, it's all the great Mamet themes addressed as only he can do it.
Yeah, what's it like for you to perform on stage with live audience? I mean, we know you from television. Completely different animal, isn't it?
Well, and I came from the theater, so it really is getting back to where...
To
yes,
roots,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I played all the greats in children's theater when I was a kid. You know, I played Grumpy and the Mad Hatter and, you know, various animals of different stripes. So, you know, this is actually getting back to it. And I took a long hiatus from the theater, and I was really happy. I did a play in New York last year, so I'm really happy to be in Chicago doing this play.
When you were on my WGN radio show, the phones went nuts when we started talking about Dermot and Greg and Criminal Minds. I mean, all these years later, people still have such fond memories of these.
It's true, and
of these shows.
It's true. And, you know, these were done back in the 50s. So, you know, it's kind of
black and white.
It's been a long time.
With Jackie Gleason.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, these, I guess... You know, it's sort of, Dermot and Greg was a wonderful sort of concept and an idea. You know, it's a little bit of Romeo and Juliet. It's a little bit of West Side Story. And we had a wonderful group of people working on that. So I, in fact, a couple of writers, really wonderful writers who are from Chicago as well. So
yeah, and Criminal Minds was really... Like, among the very first of these legal dramas...
It's true.
...that, you know, are so popular.
And pretty dark stuff. So I, you know, we didn't know. We really didn't know. It was 20 years ago that we did the pilot. We really didn't know that it was going to have the long life that it has and continues to have.
Yeah. So... what are you looking forward to about spending some time here in Chicago? You already told me that you're hitting our restaurants.
I am hitting our restaurants
near the
a little
theater,
bit,
yeah.
And I'm looking forward, as everyone is, to it warming up a little bit. But you know, I have an old friend here who plays some golf, so we're going to try to get out and play some golf.
Nice.
You know, just enjoy springtime in Chicago.
Yeah. What's the plan for Henry Johnson? Now this is the Chicago premiere. Is the plan to eventually take this to Broadway?
It would be fantastic if it had a life. We'll see what happens.
We'll look forward to it being here in Chicago. It's running through May 4th at the old Victory Gardens Theater. I shouldn't say old. It's the old Biograph Theater.
Right, that's
that they
true.
Converted to the Victory Gardens Theater, a wonderful space on North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. You can get more on their social media, victorygardens.org. And Thomas Gibson, a real pleasure to have you here with us.
Thanks so much.
There you go. Henry Johnson is the name of the play. It is at the Victory Gardens Theater on North Lincoln Avenue until May the 4th. Coming up, we'll talk about Big Doin's at the Northlight. They are celebrating their 50th anniversary. They are moving to a new spot. They've got new shows coming up. Lots to talk about as the week in theater continues. Still to come on our little Sunday extravaganza this week. The star and director of the number one movie in the world, Sinners. Michael B. Jordan joining us after 11 o'clock, and also director Ryan Coogler with what I think is the best movie of the year so far. It's stunning. This movie, Sinners. I'll tell you more about it in just a little while. We continue, though, on our Week in Theater segment, and a real pleasure to have a mainstay of the Chicago theater scene joining us on the program right now. He is the artistic director of Northlight, which I was shocked to realize is celebrating its 50th anniversary this season. The first season was produced in the 75-76 season under the company's original name, Evanston Theater Company, performed out of the Kingsley Elementary School Theater on Green Bay Road in Evanston, which ironically now is just 2 miles away from what will be Northlight's future home in Evanston. Joining us is the great B.J. Jones, Artistic Director of Northlight. Hello there, my friend. How are you?
Dean, it's an honor to be back with you again. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and it's an honor to have you joining us. You have to be one of the very first people I ever had on the theater segment here when I took it all over from Roy Leonard 100 years ago.
I think I might be.
And you've just been, I mean, I know because I've been doing it that long. So
yeah.
I want to drag you along with me for the ride. But you've been turning out such amazing, great theater for such a long time. How do you reflect on these 50 years? I mean, you haven't been doing it for 50 years at Northlight, but you've been doing it a pretty long time there yourself. How do you reflect on the longevity of this? It's hard for theater companies to stay up and running these days.
No, I know. It is 50 years. I've been artistic director in May. I'll be celebrating 28 years, beginning of my 28th season as artistic director. And it's been a remarkable journey. You know, the first piece that we produced in 1975 was starring your old friend, the late, great Mike Nussbaum, and directed by the late, great Frank Galati, two-time Tony Award winner and Oscar nominee Frank Galati. So, you know, we stem from a really rich history of tremendous artists at Northlight, and I'm really proud to be at the helm all these years, along with our executive director, Tim Evans.
Yeah, there's a great 2025-26 season plan. We'll talk about that in a second, but tell me all about your new digs now on Church Street, 1012 Church Street in Evanston.
Yeah, it's a dream come true, Dean. You know, we've been at the North Shore Center for 29 years, actually. 1997, I think we started there, and we've done incredibly well there. But we need to have a fuller space. It's going to be an extraordinary step for us with 285 really comfortable seats and great sight lines. The sound will be first class. We'll have a much larger stage house and dressing rooms, and the accompaniments for the audience are going to be beautiful. There's a dedicated box office and a bar and a cafe in the lobby, our own rehearsal space and event space.
That's great.
And a lounge and gathering areas on the first and second floor. So it will be truly wonderful. You know, we've raised $28 million. The goal is 33. I'm pretty sure we're going to get there. And when we do, we won't even have a mortgage. So it's really an extraordinary achievement for the folks at Northlight, headed by myself and Tim Evans and our capital campaign fundraiser, Kim Hoopengarner. It's really a remarkable thing. You know, we're also like half a block from the L and the Metro.
Oh, that's great.
So people will be able to get to us from downtown in a way that they haven't been able to in Skokie. Oh, yeah, we're going to open in the fall of 2026.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because it seems like you just did the groundbreaking like a month ago or something, right?
They're really moving along. We have a camera set up in the building next door, and it's amazing how fast it's going. And Bully and Andrews is doing a magnificent job. So we're really excited to share this beautiful new space.
I can't wait to see it, and I can't wait to bring some Channel 9 cameras over there. So You know, we can show it off to everybody. Yeah, we would love that.
That'd be so. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's. Was that the intent to bring it back to, you know, from which it all started, back to Evanston, or was it just this space became available and it made sense to go there?
No. We had always intended to bring it back to Evanston. It was just a matter of where. And before the pandemic, Dean, our friend Amy Morton, who owns the barn, whose barn restaurant, wonderful steakhouse right on our property, called Tim Evans up and said, I think they're going to sell this piece of property. And we looked into it, and it became available. But we didn't purchase it until after the pandemic. And that's when things really started the ball started to roll. Yeah,
that is bold. Great. That is bold. Coming out of the pandemic where, you know, the theater, well, everything was shut down, but the theater world was completely shut down. What does Northlight do? They buy a new property during this time.
Well, you know, Dean, here's the thing. Our audience has been incredibly loyal. That's the secret to the 50 years. So when you ask what I reflect on with regard to the 50 year, because I did my first play at Northlight in 1977 with two-time Tony Award winner Judith Ivey, and who was in our wedding, as a matter of fact. We, you know, it's been so long, I've been able to actually, as an actor, grow up in front of some of the same people who are attending Northlight now. They remember seeing me in plays back then, championship season and so forth. And, if I had something to say about that 50 years, is that our audience is incredibly loyal and incredibly excited. They've contributed to building this new building. They've supported us all these years. You know, we renew at over 80% every year, which is among the highest in the nation. And we've got a great group of subscribers, but the single ticket buyers have remained steady for us, even coming out of the pandemic. It's really kind of a miracle and humbling.
I think it speaks to the quality work that Northlight has been putting on over these years. I can't think of a show that wasn't thought provoking and amazingly performed, amazingly produced. It's just been nonstop quality work for all these years. So I mean
you're very kind.
That's got to be there as well. I know your current production, Prayer for the French Republic, has been extended for a week. It'll now run through May the 18th.
That's exclusive for you, Dean. That's right. We're announcing it here, and the tickets for the extension go on sale tomorrow.
Okay, great. So you've got that going on, and then talk to me about this 2025-26 season, because I especially love this first show that you're going to do of the season, the world premiere of The First Lady of Television. This is right in my wheelhouse because it's
not that old.
I do remember this, and I'm a fan of old television, and this is based on the old. Sitcom from the early 1950s, The Goldbergs, right?
That's right. Some years ago, well, it's called The First Lady of Television by Jim Sherman, the renowned Chicago playwright. That's sort of the theme for next year, actually. A lot of Chicago talent are going to be joining us for the last season at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. And Jim Sherman, he's a terrific playwright. His work's been done all over the world. And he and I got in a conversation about a documentary that I had seen back in 2009, and called You Who, Mrs. Goldberg. And that's about Gertrude Berg, who wrote, produced, directed, and owned and starred in 12,000 scripts in radio and television. In the 30s, 40s, and 50s. She was the she's the most famous person you never heard of. And I remember the show as well, Dean. God bless us. And this story is about it's about the House Un-American Activities Committee. It's about anti-Semitism, and it's starring Cindy Gold, who was a dead ringer for Gertrude Berg. So, but I first became aware of it, and we commissioned a play in 2010. But it finally came to fruition through the writing of Jim Sherman.
And it's nostalgic for sure, but sure has some themes which are very relevant to today's headlines. Gaslight by Stephen Dietz will follow. Mary Jane, The Angel Next Door. If people want to get more information about Northlight, the new season, the new location, BJ, what's the best way to do that?
www.northlight.org is our website, and the box office 847-679-9501. 679-9501.
Good deal.
Come see Prayer for the French Republic, co-produced with our friends at Theater Wit and directed by Jeremy Wechsler.
It's extended now through May 18th, and tickets for that will go on sale tomorrow. BJ Jones, Northlight's artistic director. Great to talk to you, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks, my friend.
You're one of a kind, Dean. Thank you.
What energy that Tim Joyce has.
It's all about the peeps.
It's all about that and the fact that it's springtime.
And he's 30.
Hey, you didn't bleep him.
He's
like
30 years younger than us.
That's something to do with that also. I noticed, though, that you don't bleep him when he reads the weather.
Well, he doesn't use the kind of language that you do. We only bleep you when we have to. Which it turns out is quite
often.
Yeah.
No.
Old truck stop Schwanny over here.
No, okay.
Gandy, how about those Cubs right now?
Yeah, they're going crazy with
that. Is it too early for me to get on the bandwagon?
It's never too early to get on the bandwagon. Just get a seat by the door in case they come tumbling down.
And
you can jump
off.
Yeah, you can jump off quick. No, it's been good.
It's been a pretty impressive week.
It's been a crazy week. The game the other night, the 13-11 game, I left my house to go to Channel 9. They were up 7-1. I walked in the door at Channel 9, and they were down 11-7. It's like, wait a second, what the heck happened here?
Crazy.
And then they ended up coming back. They're just the seventh team in baseball history to give up 10 runs in an inning in a game and still win. So it was nuts. This series has been a little crazy, and you worry a little bit about the bullpen, but good hitting will erase a lot of the mistakes that could be made out of that pen.
Yeah. I was reading something that was like the first time since 1893 that they scored like 16 runs in one inning or something.
Yeah, so the combined total in that eighth inning was 16 runs, and it was actually the most in the history of Wrigley Field by two teams. Wrigley's been around since the early 1900s. And there were some things that never happened in a full game that happened in three innings. That was seven home runs, two grand slams, a home run of each variety. So a solo shot, a two-run shot, a three-run shot, and a grand slam. Each of the four possible hits, single, double, triple, homer. And they had three half innings of five or more runs. That had never happened in a full major league game, and it happened in two and a half innings.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Schwanny, are you excited?
Oh, I think it's fine. Indubitably. And I checked the standings. They're leading the NL Central.
Yes,
is that
they
correct?
Are. Yep, they're up by game.
Now, see, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, once in a while we know what we're talking about. Yeah.
It's always nice, though, when they win a game at Wrigley Field to hear the song that was written for WGN Radio by the late Steve Goodman.
Steve Goodman.
Go Cubs, go.
It was, I believe he was a Maine East guy like myself.
Baseball time is here.
Steve Goodman was?
Yeah, I believe so.
Catch it all on WGN.
That's my favorite part. Marquee leaves that in.
And
yeah. It's great.
Love that. I destroyed all copies of it.
When they left?
When they went dead to me.
I recently found my 45 of that.
Wow.
Yeah, I recently found it. I was cleaning out some stuff.
Oh, save that.
Came across the
save that.
Came across it, yeah.
I love that Andy has a 45.
I was just going to say, you never told me you had a 45 RPM.
I was big into the 45s as a kid. My brother and I would play Casey's Top 40 or what it was called before.
Yeah,
we would lay out the records in the order.
Oh, wow.
And then we'd start playing them.
Which one of you would say, keep your feet on the ground, but keep reaching?
Well, that was mine because that was going to be the one going into broadcasting, yeah.
Yeah.
That is...
keep reaching for the stars.
That is so cool to hear.
Oh, yeah. We go in the basement and have a little Casey's Top 40.
I think we're going to have to rename the show Three Dorks at least. A nice little different version of Easter Parade. Usually we hear the Fred Astaire, Judy Garland version from the motion picture. That's Rosemary Clooney with the song of the day.
From one of her recordings? Is this from another movie?
A 1955 recording. Not from a movie.
Not from, okay, just... 1950. Part of a recording.
Part of a recording.
Album. Yeah.
You know what it makes me miss? Very few things that I actually miss being at the old dump on Michigan Avenue. But I do miss being in that window on mornings like this.
People walking by all dressed up.
All dressed up for Easter Sunday on the avenue, Michigan Avenue. You know, and they're, out in their finery coming to or from church on Easter Sunday morning, coming by, tapping on the window,
waving.
I make funny faces at their kids.
Oh, yes. I will always have a memory of that.
Uncle Dean, they love coming, visiting their Uncle Dean in the window. Some of them would leave their pants on before they put their butts.
Oh, gosh.
Ah, the memories.
That's a nice image.
Ah, the memories. Burnt into my memories forever.
Yeah, I have a couple in particular.
I've seen more body parts in that window than a doctor of the emergency room in Northwestern. crazy. Anyway, I hope everyone's having a nice Easter morning. You know what else I really miss? When I was a kid on Easter morning, my mom would, get up early and start cooking. We almost always had, the family dinners for holidays at our house. My mom loved to entertain. And she would start the cooking, the baking, the house smelled amazing.
I'll bet.
Right?
I would imagine if you were having a whole family gathering, it started the day before.
Well, she would start certainly with the pastries. There are lots of sweets and pastries that are traditional for Easter in Greek houses. And her and my grandmother, my mom and my grandmother, would start, baking weeks in advance sometimes. Because, the tradition was to pass out pastries and sweets to, friends and so forth. And I would help. I have very distinct memories of, doing little things, little things that little kids could do back then. Just the it was like Thanksgiving morning. I think, everyone can, visualize that smell when, your mom started making Thanksgiving dinner and that just the house.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Smelled amazing.
Yeah.
So, those are things I miss.
But you continue, though. I mean, it's great that, your enjoyment and love for cooking was started that way.
Oh, yeah.
And helping out your mother.
Oh, yeah, very definitely.
Yeah.
Very definitely. You went to Indiana Dunes State Park a million times, I'll bet, as a kid, right?
We were there quite often. And now you have the Indiana Dunes State Park and the Indiana Dunes National Park right next door to each other.
Do you know that Indiana Dunes State Park will celebrate its 100th anniversary this year?
You know what? That's right. It was started in the 1920s, yes.
Yeah.
And they still have those wonderful entryways, like, you would have like a ticket taker or someone there, where you...
Like a gate. There's a gate that you
there.
Have to go through to get
if
into
If you
the
drive park. Through, if you drive through, just take time to look at those, and there's some really wonderful inscriptions on the top of them talking about this is a place to, rest and restore yourself and, this things like that you just don't see anymore.
Big birthday celebration is planned for this summer at Indiana Dunes State Park. I didn't realize what a moneymaker it is. Indiana Dunes tourism according to an article that I read, generates $25.6 million.
I'm not surprised.
The visitor center sees 230,000 visitors every year.
Yeah, yep. They've just completed a remodeling out there of the beach house area there on the main beach. Yeah. And then there's a nature center that's off secluded more or less into the woods. That is quite quite a display there. Very nice exhibit.
Yeah, that was great. We used to go.
Went camping there in Boy Scouts, didn't you?
Yeah, we've talked about this. We used to go to the dunes all the time. Troop 585 out of the south side of Chicago, look out for us. We're coming. We're coming to make your sassafras tea. We'd go there camping. We did so much and learned so much. We hiked all over that park and up and down those sand dunes. Boy, my muscles still hurt from hiking up and down those sand dunes. But such a great time. I can't tell you the number of times that our scoutmaster would take us out on the beach at night, pitch black at night. You know, there were no street lights. There were no city lights.
Yeah, you're far enough away from the city where it would be dark.
You could see everything. And he would have us lay on the sand and just look up at the sky at the constellations. You know, and we learned about the constellations, and it was great. It was great. I loved it.
That would be awesome.
Yeah,
to do. He's never there at night. You know, just there during the day to hang out on the beach and swim.
Have a couple of beers.
Well, not when you're 15. No.
I don't know about you, but I had a couple of beers when I was 15. Yeah, great memories. Ask me about any of the constellations. And I couldn't tell you one thing. I don't remember.
Come on. Big Dipper, Little
Big Dipper.
Dipper.
Yeah. Cassiopeia, was that something?
Yeah, I think that's a thing.
What's the one that looked like a W? There was a constellation that was shaped like a W.
Yeah, it's W.
No.
Orion? I don't know. Just taking names now.
You're making stuff up.
Yeah, why not? If you say it with conviction, why not?
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Send me that information on the plans for that 100th anniversary party.
All right.
I want to see that.
Should we do the show there for that?
We should do the
show.
Put
it on the list.
Oh, that would be marvelous, yes.
Yeah, should we go?
Absolutely.
I could show you where I cut my foot open.
On this spot.
Yeah.
WGN radio and TV personality, Dean
Richards. My blood flowed.
Injured his foot.
Yeah.
And required medical attention.
Did I ever tell you this story? How we were doing a service project. We're cleaning out one of the creeks that had been, people had thrown garbage in over the years and, you know, like that. So, you know, we little Boy Scouts were out there. Let's go clean out the creek. Come on, let's do a service project. And we're out there, and you know, amongst the things that were thrown into that creek, broken bottles.
Sure.
Yeah, and I could show. Would you like to see the scar? I still have it. I can slip my shoe and sock off right now.
Right. Take a picture of it.
Show it.
And put it up.
Put it on the website, yeah. Drive some traffic to WGNradio.com.
Wouldn't be the first person on Facebook showing off their feet, I'll tell you that. But that is the blues guitar of the legendary Buddy Guy. Did you ever interview Buddy Guy, Schwanee, in your many musical travels?
No, I never interviewed him, but I was at the original Buddy Guy's Legends with some friends, and we were listening to somebody, and he suddenly walked out on stage. The place went wild.
Yeah.
But I never did meet or interview him, no.
Spent about an hour with him the other day. Went over to his current location on... Is it Wabash?
Wabash and 8th Street.
Yeah.
They did a great job recreating the original, by the way.
I sat down and had a nice one-on-one interview with him, and I'll tell you why. Because this movie that we're about to talk about, Sinners, it's the new number one movie in America, is a history of the Mississippi Delta Blues / vampire movie. It's a little of both, but it's a phenomenal history of the blues and how it's influenced every musical genre that has come since the blues really got its start in the Mississippi Delta. And Buddy Guy has a part in this movie. I don't want to give away too much of what he does in the movie, but he is a delightful surprise, let's just say. That's all I'll tell you. And that, it's not giving away too much to say. He's in the credits. He's, you know, it's widely known that he's part of this movie. But we're going to do a piece later on this week on Buddy Guy, on his participation in this movie, his fascinating history, what it was like for him to, you know, how, the difference between getting up on stage and performing with Eric Clapton and hundreds of thousands of people watching and sitting in a movie studio someplace and doing a movie scene. We had just the best conversation with him. And you especially, Shwani, I think will enjoy it because it's all about music history and, you know, all like that.
Yep.
And in the next half hour, we'll get to our A-list interview for this morning. The director of the movie, the guy who decided to put Buddy Guy in his movie, Oscar-nominated director Ryan Coogler, and the star of the movie, Mr. Michael B. Jordan. That is all coming right up. Talking about Indiana Dunes State Park a minute ago, somebody from the 773 area code says, I walk the beach regularly. I'm originally from South Chicago in Bowen High School. Hopefully things will not be cut back at Indiana Dunes State Park because a lot of rangers have been dismissed.
Well, that is a state facility. In the national park, that might be an issue there.
But not a Dunes State Park?
The Indiana Dunes, Ogden Dunes State Park there, that pretty much is up to the state of Indiana. Just like, for instance, you know, state parks, natural resources here in Illinois would look at Illinois Beach State Park or Starved Rock State Park, okay. Places like that.
All right. Yeah. Just want to make sure.
But yes, in the end, though, you hope that staff doesn't get cut back because they can be so informative
you've
there.
You've been hearing, yeah, exactly. It would be a shame to lose all of that, but... You know, these days you don't know what's there and what's not there anymore. So I just want to make sure that when they erect the statue of me, you know, here's where Dean Richards cut his foot open.
You're going to have your foot displayed there?
They're going to have a gigantic foot statue in my honor, not my memory.
Your memory?
Not my memory. I'm not quite ready for that yet, but... Whose big foot is that over there? 11:38, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN.
I thank the Lord.
What a Chicago gem this man is. The legendary Buddy Guy. 89 years old. He'll be in about a month or so.
I love the life.
And still touring, still playing. His club, Buddy Guy's Legends on South Wabash. Going strong, people going to hear the blues. He is one of the giants in the field, and we're so fortunate that he's been here in Chicago for such a long time. Do you know he grew up literally a sharecropper, picking cotton? And, you know, somebody saw him playing with a little makeshift... like a matchbox with a rubber band on it, play, you know, like pretending like it was a guitar, and he had some talent with it, I guess, and it was making rhythms and sound, and somebody said, you ought to have a guitar, a stranger, and bought him a guitar, and that set off his career as a guitarist and now one of the great blues guitarists of all time. I'm admire him in so many ways. He's just a great guy. And as I say, as part of this new movie that's out this weekend called Sinners, it's the number one movie of the weekend. It beat the Minecraft movie. It's going to wind up taking in about $45 million when all is said and done today. And as I said in my review the other day, I think it's just one of the best movies that has come out so far this year. It is by far the best movie that director Ryan Coogler has put out. And he's put out some pretty great movies like Black Panther and the Creed movies and Fruitvale Station, all of which he made with the star of this movie, the great Michael B. Jordan. This movie is a history of the blues told in the most interesting way that evolves into a vampire movie, a scary, white-knuckling, sometimes a little bloody vampire movie, and that he's been able to bridge these two genres into one movie is amazing. But visually, it's amazing. Performance-wise, it's amazing. Story-wise, it's amazing. I can't recommend this movie enough. I really enjoyed it. One of the interesting things is that Michael B. Jordan plays a dual role in this movie. He plays twin brothers. And, you know, the brothers are distinctly different in this movie, but obviously they look identical. And it's, you know, that with special effects that they have today and CGI and AI, they're able to do this flawlessly. It's not even a thing anymore like it was back in the day on the Patty Duke show or, you know, any number of other dual performances that may have come before it. Michael B. Jordan is really just great in this movie. And when I sat down with him and his castmates in New York City a couple of weeks ago, that is one of the things that we talked about.
Every time I see you in a movie, I remember back in the day, you were a little baby actor. I was a little baby reporter. We were just getting started. But this movie tops everything that you've ever done,
I think. Thank you, sir.
It's incredible. Starting off with the double role that everyone is asking me how you did that. Was there a Michael tennis ball? Was there a Michael CG Michael? An AI Michael? How did you count? It's flawless.
Thank you, man. I think we tried every technique possible to get to make it work. I had a double most of the time that I was you know, talking to, and in some takes with the technical aspect of it all, nobody needed to be there at all. So it would just be me, and the other actors would be you know, looking at a mark or you know, guessing, you know, where
and then you go back and reshoot it, and then as the other character.
Correct. So, like, you know, we would do scenes maybe four times, you know. You know, we do it, you know, a couple times as smoke, and then I would go change and kind of get into that physical body of who Stack was, and then come back and do it again. So that was kind of the process.
So maybe one of the most challenging roles you've ever taken on, I would think.
I think so, for sure. Definitely, man. Just from the technical aspect, a lot of times I was like, man, this is my first time making a movie. But that fear, that uncomfortableness, I think pushed and strived all of us to kind of, like, you know, to raise the bar and to rise to the occasion and try to do our best work for each other. Honestly, like, we really been really blessed to have two great scene partners. Not even two, the entire cast have great scene partners.
Entire cast,
and we pushed each other.
The Ryan factor in this is so tangible, of how big it is and bold and spectacle and. Yeah, I don't want to give anything away that will be surprises, but were you surprised at the range and the depth that you had to go through in this movie?
For my character?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the I feel like every single character on the screen has a journey. I always reference the young girl at the beginning of this, in front of the store, in front of Bo Chow's store. Like, she has this whole, like, you learn so much about her history. She knows about the smokestacks twins. She's a little scared. Then she gets an education, and then she kind of finds her voice. Every single character has such a unique and clear journey. I mean, I love Annie's journey, and I feel like, you know, in those seven pages in that first scene, you learned so much about her and, yeah. and Smoke and their history, their love, their understanding, their grief, and just how, like, they don't ask for forgiveness or understanding. It's just there.
Yeah.
It's just offered and it's just taken.
Yeah.
It's just such a beautiful, I don't know. I just don't know how Ryan does it.
Yeah, exactly. I know you're chasing me up, but I got to ask Kaylee. I got to include. We're so different for you. Mm. Such a departure for you. Is that something that you wanted to do intentionally to kind of change the curvature of your career a little
Absolutely.
Bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been saying, though, that this couldn't have possibly happened at any sooner point in my life, where I maybe would have wanted it to sort of look for that change in how did you just say it?
Curvature?
Yeah, exactly. Of the
career? Feel free to use that all day.
I yes, might. Yeah, it couldn't have happened any sooner. This was presented to me at a time in my life where I was ready to be pushed out of my comfort zone, but ready to step further into my own. And yeah. I think that the role of Mary really did that for me.
Yeah, boy, you are bad in this. In a great way. Yeah, thank you all so much.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was Hailee Steinfeld, who, you know, we've been watching grow up in the movies, now with a very, very different role. I don't want to tell you too much about her character here because it'll be such a nice surprise if you see the movie. Also, we heard Wunmi Musaku, who is along with Michael B. Jordan, talking about their brand new movie, Sinners. You heard them talk about Ryan frequently, and that is the Oscar-nominated director, Ryan Coogler, who we'll hear from coming up next. Dean Richards on WGN with our A-list interviews with the star. And that includes one of the brightest, most creative directors on the scene today. Ryan Coogler has been making motion pictures for quite some time now. He did the film Fruitvale Station with Michael B. Jordan. He did the Black Panther with Michael B. Jordan. He did Wakanda Forever. He did the Creed movies with Michael B. Jordan. And now he has taken on this new film called Sinners, which he not only directs, but he also wrote. And I think part of what makes this so interesting is he has taken two different genres of movies, really three different genres of movies, and flawlessly combined them into one movie. It is a musical because this movie is partially a history of the Mississippi Delta Blues, which we all should know more about. It's a purely American art form that I think is completely underappreciated. It is a white-knuckling vampire movie at the same time. And it's really a social statement also about living in the Deep South in the 1930s. Just happens to be these African-American people who are living in the, you know, era. And they these two twin brothers come in, both played by Michael B. Jordan, and want to open a juke joint, some place for folks to come and drink and eat and dance and have a good time. That juke joint on its opening night is invaded by a band of vampires. And then the movie takes a completely different turn and is a pretty scary vampire movie at the same time. I can't recommend this movie enough. I absolutely love it, as you will hear me fawning with director Ryan Coogler and one of the young stars in the movies, Mile Canton.
I could not have been more blown away, delighted, treated to what filmmaking is about. It's all you, man. It's all you. Congratulations.
I appreciate the kindness. I got a phenomenal team and crew, and the concept of this movie was resting upon finding this young man. You know, it wouldn't work if we didn't portray a young musician so gifted that you could believe that this master vampire was after him, you know, and that these crazy gangster twins, you know, wanted to protect him.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean, I appreciate the kind words about the film. It's a team effort for sure.
Yeah, but the bigness of it all, the vision, the you all, I don't even want to spoil anything, but there's a dance number in this movie that is one of the most magnificent scenes I've ever seen on film before, and how you interweave everything. It's stunning. Was going to ask you, I don't want to give away, and I won't air this part of it, but you've got Chicago's Buddy Guy as a major player in this. Do I give that away ahead of time? That's kind of a surprise at the end.
I mean, people going to know, I think. Like, even our credits, you know, like, I think it's okay to talk about him being in it. I think we probably shouldn't expose is who he plays in it.
Yeah.
You know,
let me just pivot over here, Miles, to you, because you were stunning, and this is your first film ever,
yes,
right?
Sir.
How? What's it feel like to be part of this major, major, major project as your first time?
Man, it feels unreal, man. It feels unreal to jump into something like this and to be able to work with Ryan was really special for me. I grew up watching his films. And they've always been so impactful on me. So for, you know, him and Ryan, for this to be their fifth film and for me to be a part of it, it's been incredible.
Yeah, this is Miles Canton's first motion picture. I'm going to cut the interview here because we talk about some things that are definite spoilers that I don't want to give away. So, you know, we'll pick it up another time after people have seen the movie a little bit. But this is Miles Canton's first movie. This is only the second movie ever for Chicago Blues great Buddy Guy. And as part of this interview, Ryan Coogler talks about why he chose Buddy Guy for the movie. It was because of his uncle, Uncle James, who was a Buddy Guy fan. Uncle James never went out. Never, you know, did much of anything but, you know, work and provide for his family. But if Buddy Guy was in town, he would get all dressed up and go see Buddy Guy wherever Buddy Guy was performing. So Ryan Coogler knew of Buddy Guy through his uncle and wanted to include Buddy Guy in the movie to honor his now late uncle. So, well, I'm going to tell you much more about this. As I had mentioned earlier, I went and talked with Buddy Guy on Friday. We're going to share that interview. We're going to combine it all so it'll all make some sense to you. But in the meantime, I don't want to spoil any enjoyment that you might get from seeing this movie called Sinners. I don't want to give away any spoilers. So I'll just say I recommend the movie highly. I recommend you see it on as big a screen as possible. And I recommend that you don't leave the theater too soon, because there are a couple of scenes during the credits and after the credits that you definitely do not want to miss. Chicago Cubs television history today, Andy.
Really? First game ever?
It was the very first. It was April 20th, 1946. Station WBKB took its mobile cameras to cover the opening game at Wrigley Field between the Cubs and St. Louis Cardinals.
Nice.
First time ever a Cubs game was on TV.
It doesn't, well, I mean, it's a while ago, but it's not that long ago that, you know, this technology.
Yeah.
And imagine, you know, how we are now and all the advances in technology and now HDTV and 4K and next.
Yeah, I mean, you can go out there now with your iPhone and...
I mean, watching a game now,
broadcast the TV.
It's interesting too, because, you know, when we were talking about the 13-11 Cubs win the other day, a lot of people were remembering the game May 17th of 1979, when the Cubs and the Phillies played a 23-22 game.
Right.
Dave Kingman and Mike Schmidt were putting on a show, and you know, I was working the TV, and Chris Bowden had noticed it, and I went back to MLB TV to start watching it, and the fact that you're watching a game, and the score and the count are not always on the screen. You have to depend on the announcer to tell you,
yeah.
And just the graininess of the picture.
It was pretty raw.
It's hard to imagine the whole we were able to watch sports like that.
The whole thing was pretty raw, but the fact that it was even, I mean, you know, in the when the graphics were on, they were so cheesy.
Oh, yeah, they were terrible.
But, you know, is there anything cooler, you know, than, you know, back in those days? Would that have been Harry Caray or Brickhouse?
That was still Brickhouse. It was Brickhouse for the first three and the last three, and Lou Boudreau came into the booth in the middle three.
Yes, 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 yes.
And, you know, the Hey Hey graphic came on the screen several times because of all the home runs that were hit that day.
And it would blink on and off.
And it blinked on and off.
Damn.
Right.
And that's how that whole thing started, because they put the graphic up and he repeated it and became his signature home run call.
Wasn't WBKB, didn't that become?
That's now ABC 7.
Channel 7.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't watch that channel at all. My TV doesn't get it. Cubs would move over to WGN-TV in 1948, 2 years later.
I would think that, you know, not every game was broadcast in those early years. Yeah. You know, the home games, but away games, wow, that would be next to impossible to do, given the technology.
Back in those days, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. But anyway, it's kind of cool.
Very cool.
History. History.
We like history.
Yeah. 1946, that's when my first Victory Auto Records commercial was on also. How about that for some memories there, Shawnee? The old Patty Duke Show theme.
Okay, I was trying to place it. Patty Duke.
Yeah. Patty Duke Show, 1963 to 66, in its original run, and then pretty much in rerun heaven ever since then. The story of cousins, identical cousins, who walk alike, talk alike, at times they even sound alike, or however that lyric went. It's one of these dual roles, like we were talking about with this Michael B. Jordan movie where he plays two roles. It was Patty Duke playing the sophisticated cousin Kathy and the American, you know, rock and roll teenager, Patty, at the same time. Do you not remember this?
Yeah, I do. And there was a movie with a similar theme where
Parent Trap.
That was it. Thank you.
Yeah. Parent Trap with Haley Mills.
Haley Mills.
The original version was with Haley Mills, but Lindsay Lohan remade the Parent Trap.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Years later, similar kind of thing. Cousins who were twin sisters who were separated when their parents divorced. One child went with the father, one child went with the mother, and they accidentally meet up. Later at a summer camp, I want to say.
It was a summer camp. They're standing in line at the dining service, and they look at each other and you go, what?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Hello?
Yeah, and then they decide, since you know, one has never met the mother and the other has never met the father, they do the switcheroo, and you know, the one who never met the father goes with the father, and the other goes with the mother, and hilarity ensues. But that's some of the famous dual roles. We had some fun talking about this the other day on the TV morning show of other dual roles. Who remembers some of these dual roles that have been done in the movies through the years? 312-981-7200. Do you remember any, Shawnee, from movies or TV at all?
Well, no, not really, unless you want to count Superman. Go ahead and laugh, you know, but Clark Kent playing Superman.
Well, you know, Al Pacino.
Kind of.
Al Pacino, or not Al Pacino, Robert De Niro did a movie just like a couple of months ago or something.
Yes.
Called Alta Vista, where he played two different gangsters who are identical.
Yeah.
And like Superman, the only difference was one wore glasses and one didn't wear glasses.
Then you have Bruce Wayne and Batman.
And Batman, yeah.
Who was the Dick Grayson, his ward, so to speak, and then was Robin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
You know.
But I mean, like on the TV show Friends.
Oh, yeah, Phoebe and Ursula.
Yeah, Phoebe played both Phoebe Buffay, of course, and her long-lost sister, or twin sister, Ursula, dual roles. Jake Gyllenhaal did one in a movie called Enemies, where he played a dual role. There was like kind of a, you know, thriller, steamy kind of a deal. There've been lots of. How about Eddie Murphy?
How about Eddie Murphy?
Holy,
all kinds of different roles,
coming
more than just dual roles. He played several different parts.
He often would play every role.
Yeah,
like in the barbershop scene in Coming to America, he was two or three people in that one.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And Arsenio Hall did a couple of different roles in that movie also.
Right.
But I think about Eddie Murphy's version of the Nutty Professor and that dinner table scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he is.
That's hilarious.
He's the grandmother. He's the grandfather. He's the brother. He's the mother of the little boy who's, you know, like kind of flexing his muscles. And the mother starts going, Hercules, Hercules, Hercules. You know what I mean? You know what movie I'm talking about?
Yes, yes.
Hilarious. That's one of the funniest scenes ever. How about Jerry Lewis?
Oh, yeah.
For heaven's sakes, in The Nutty Professor and other movies where he's done dual roles. There have been some great ones.
There was one in the Brady Bunch that I remember. Peter was a it wasn't really even a twin, but it was him, obviously, playing both roles. A new student moved into town, and he was Peter had two dates for the same night, and talked that guy, the other guy, into dating one of the girls
doing
he was supposed to go out with.
Yeah, yeah.
It was him in both.
Classics, classics. Let's talk about this a little bit. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We'll get right back. 1223, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, Easter Sunday morning on WGN. You and your family, your friends, all have a wonderful day today. Happy Passover. Good times for everybody. We talk dual roles. This new movie that has just opened, new number one movie in America, Sinners, features Michael B. Jordan in a dual role as twin brothers named Smoke and Stack. Incredible performance. And I was asking what other dual roles you remember from TV and the movies. And someone remembered that Michael B. Jordan had done this before. He had done dual roles when he was an actor on All My Children. He played a couple of different roles in that. But lots of you are remembering roles like Peter Sellers. In the movie Dr. Strangelove, he played the title character, Lionel Mandrake, and also President Merkin Muffley. I had forgotten the names of those characters. I remember he did a dual role, but I couldn't remember the names of the characters. Excellent choices there. Here's 773 area code, remembering that Betty Davis played twins once. In a movie called Once in a Stolen Life in the 1940s, and then again in the movie Dead Ringers in the 1960s. And they add on, Patty Duke Show was my favorite when I was little. I got to say, I used to enjoy the movie. I don't think I saw it in its original run in the early 1960s, but I definitely remember watching it in reruns. Somebody remembering Eddie Murphy playing seven characters as the Klumps, the Klump family in The Nutty Professor. Tyler Perry often playing multiple roles in his movies. Here's one. Oh, this is a great one. Elizabeth Montgomery in Bewitched played both Samantha and her evil cousin, Serena. That's an awesome one. Samantha and Serena. 630 area code is remembering the fairy tale, The Prince and the Pauper. Oh, that was one of my favorite family classics that Fraser Thomas used to play all the time. Prince and the Pauper, two boys switch. They're identical, and they switch. One was a prince, and one was a pauper, thus the name. And, yeah, that was a great movie. What else do we have here? 224 area code, remembering the incredible Mr. Limpet with Don Knotts. Don Knotts, who also played a fish. Okay, I guess I can, I'll go along with that. Let's go to the phone lines, 312-981-7200. Ed's in Wheeling. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean.
Hey, buddy.
This one goes back quite a bit, but Dr. Strangelove, Peter Sellers Peter played, Sellers. I believe, three different roles in that movie.
Three roles in that movie. I'm going to have to go back and watch that. Do you ever, you know, some of these classics that, you know, you grew up with or you watch several times and you haven't seen them in a million years and you just want to go back and refresh a little bit? I think I need to do that with Dr. Strangelove.
He played the president of the U.S. and he played a British officer, and he played Dr. Strangelove himself
in
a wheelchair.
Peter Sellers was so great. Such a great actor. I appreciate the call, Ed. Thank you very much. Let's go to Donna in Elk Grove Village. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi. You've forgotten a fantastic movie called The Man in the Iron Mask.
Man in the Iron Mask. What do you remember from that?
Very young. The guy who was the star in that Titanic, he had very long curly hair.
The star of the original Titanic?
No, the one Celine Dion.
The more recent one, Leonardo DiCaprio?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, all right. I don't know if I ever saw that movie. I'm going to have to go back and check that one out. But he played a dual role, though, huh?
He starred the man in the Iron Mask, and he starred the Dauphin of France.
Okay. I'm going to go back and check those out because I have absolutely no memory of those. But I appreciate you bringing it up, though, and I thank you. Have a great day today.
Same to you. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you, too. Thank you. Hello. This is Bob and Berwin. You're on WGN.
Hi, I remember the movie with Betty Davis. I think she played two sisters. Am I correct?
I'm not remembering that, but somebody said that she played twins in the movie Once in a Stolen Life. Does that ring a bell? And then Dead Ringer in the 1960s.
Okay. That's about all that I can think of.
That's all. That's what you remember. That's more than I can remember.
They were playing, because they had a show, the picture in two different angles. She was in the same room, but I don't know how they did the photography of it, but it was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, that was the technology back in the day like that. I appreciate your call. Thank you, Bob. Let me see here. Yeah, somebody said a second Dead Ringers movie starred Jeremy Irons. Let me see here. What do we have here? Wow, the phone line's going nuts. Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams, of course, playing the dual role. That makes good sense. Face Off with John Travolta. Paul on the Southwest Side is texting in. He remembers Barbara Eden playing I Dream of Jeannie and also her brunette wicked sister. I don't think we ever learned what the sister's name was. But, yeah, Barbara Eden definitely did that. Somebody else on our text line from 773 remembering on Beverly Hillbillies, Jethro and Jethrine Bodine. The scariest depiction ever.
Man, I haven't thought of that in years. Jethrine.
Yeah, I'm going to have nightmares now thinking about that. Do you like cake, Shawnee?
Do I like cake?
Yeah.
Any kind. Yes.
You like coconut cake?
Yes, I do.
You like coconut chocolate cake?
Yes, I do.
I made that on my TV cooking segment.
Did you bring any in?
No, of course not.
Okay. You asked me if I like all this. You said you made some.
I didn't say I wanted you to have any.
Well, you know,
I just said I wondered if you liked it.
No, I do. Yes.
There's this coconut cake. It's coconut white chocolate cake that a famous bakery in Los Angeles makes. And Tom Cruise, if he wants to give you a gift, goes and buys one of these cakes at this bakery. It's like 35, 40 bucks, something like that, for the cake. And they're called Tom Cruise Coconut Cakes. And this past week on my TV cooking segment, I figured out how to make one. And I've got the recipe.
Did you get the recipe from the bakery?
Not from the bakery. I figured it out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, figured it out. And you know what? It was pretty good.
Was it?
Yeah, I should have brought you some.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of recipes for something like that that you could find.
I'm sure that there are copycat, like mine, a copycat recipe. But I'm going to go over the whole thing, and I'll talk a little bit about how you make it and how it came out. It's really a perfect Easter dessert. Might be a little late to be putting out a dessert, making a cake right now for, your Easter. But it's a really nice spring dessert. It's nice and light, and I love coconut. Can't get enough.
Yeah.
I learned, from talking to people, not everybody loves coconut.
Well, what was the candy bar? Almond Joy? That had coconut in it?
Yeah.
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 Delicious.
Yeah, delish. And Mounds bars.
And Mounds. Mounds, that's it.
Yeah, they both. Almond Joy also had a little almond in there, too. It's good eating. We'll get about into that coming up in our Food Time show, coming up next. 12:39, it's Dean Richards, our Easter Sunday show. We'll talk about this Tom Cruise coconut cake on a Food Time segment. Coming up in just a couple of minutes here, but man, oh man, what a reaction to this dual role topic that we brought up, having to do with the new Michael B. Jordan movie in which he plays twin brothers in a dual role. I asked if you remembered some other dual roles, and turns out a lot of you do, like Cindy in Bloomingdale. You're on WGN. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dean. I was just calling up. One of my favorite movies is Adaptation with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
And he played screenwriter brothers. And I think he might have been nominated for an Oscar for that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can't remember if he was nominated, but I definitely remember him
playing
that role.
I know one
of
the actors won an Oscar for it.
I remember the person that wrote the screenplay also won. I want to say it was Charlie Kaufman, maybe. That one best original screenplay.
Yes.
That I remember, and I remember Nicolas Cage.
And Meryl Streep.
He always does such, he's always pushing the envelope, let's say.
And Chris somebody or other won a best supporting actor for it. I'm not sure.
This was in that movie. I can't remember now. But
there's somebody named Chris, and he played the orchid thief.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up. I'm not remembering, but thank you for the call. I hope you have a wonderful Easter today.
Okay,
thank you.
And you too. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Hi, Mike. You're on WGN.
Hey, great fun question. I was just going to throw out there 1980 Bosom Buddies. Tom Hanks, Peter Scolari.
That's right. That's right. Where they lived in a woman's dormitory and they had to dress up as women part of the time.
Yeah. It was hysterical.
I brought that up to Tom.
It wasn't very well done, but hey, everybody's got to start somewhere,
you
right?
You know what? It was a 70s. Was it 70s? 70s or 80s? I can't remember now. But
1980.
I brought it up to Tom Hanks once. You know, that was he more challenged, doing Bosom Buddies or some whatever movie we were talking about? He started laughing, and he said he apologized for that old series. I think it's funny to watch those old shows. I enjoy them. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Have a great day today. And William on the south side of good old Chicago, you're on WGN.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I thought of two. Some Like It Hot.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Curtis.
Wow, yes.
And
and then The Seven Faces of Dr. Lau with, with Tony Randall.
Wow, wow, wow. I've completely...
Those, both of those go back there sometime.
Those are good ones. The Seven Faces, that's a fantastic one. And Some Like It Hot, which I would argue might be among the best comedies of all time, with not only Tony Curtis doing the double role, but also Jack Lemmon, right?
I believe that's correct. Yes, yeah, that sounds right. Yeah,
yeah, Jack Lemmon was the was his other band playing buddy who also dressed up. Good picks. I appreciate the call, Michael. William, rather, thank you. Have a great day and happy Easter to you. Thank you for the call. Yeah, there's some really good ones. And, wow, tons of them on our text line. 815 area code. What was the movie that Eddie Murphy was in where he played maybe five characters? Actually, it was seven characters. We counted them. That was his version of the Nutty Professor. Lindsay Lohan, 847 area code, remembers, played a dual role in The Parent Trap, like Haley Mills. Yeah, we had mentioned that. A lot of people remembering Elizabeth Montgomery for playing Samantha and Serena in Bewitched. What else do we have here? Boy, there's tons of them, tons of them. Jerry Lewis, Ronald Coleman, Frank Morgan. This is interesting, and I'd forgotten about this. Had several roles in The Wizard of Oz, where he played the wizard. He played Professor Marvel. He played the gatekeeper. He played lots of roles in that classic motion picture. So, yeah, there are plenty of dual-plus roles to be spoken for there. All right, let me take a break. I want to tell you about this Tom Cruise coconut cake that we made on my TV cooking segment this past Wednesday. If you have questions that we can help you with on the food department on this Easter Sunday, or a favorite Easter dessert that you like to put out, this coconut cake is really perfect for Easter. It's light. It's springtimey. It looks like a nice springtime cake. Let me tell you all about it when we come right back. All right, it's 12:48. And this is Dean Richards. Our Sunday morning show includes Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program. Heard every Sunday, we bring you all kinds of culinary treats. Today I want to focus in on Easter desserts. A lot of you may be sitting down to your Easter brunches as we speak. Some of you getting together later on. Maybe you're still looking for some ideas for a nice Easter dessert. Over the past several weeks, we've been offering up some ideas for the Easter table, for Passover celebrations. Today is the final day of Passover as well. We've had macaroon recipes, and we've had my mom's deviled egg recipes. We've had, Easter ham recipes. We've covered quite a bit over the past couple of weeks. We keep all of our food recipes and the videos of me cooking them on our TV morning show. We put them all in one place, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. That's where you can find it all. I've got all the recipes and the videos of me cooking them. The recipe that I did this past week was one that we kind of got the idea for when the story came out that actor Tom Cruise gives out as gifts these special coconut cakes, which are sold at a fancy schmancy bakery in the Los Angeles area. It's called Doan's Bakery. And for a ridiculous price, they make these really super delicious white cakes. They're white cakes with the buttercream frosting and toasted coconut and white chocolate baked into the cake batter. So, we were talking about, Tom Cruise giving out these extravagant cakes. And Larry Potash says to me, you ought to try to make one of those things. So I sat down with it. Actually, I tried it. You know, we tried it. And I was like, hey, I think I can figure this out. And I made the Tom Cruise white chocolate coconut cake this past week. And, you know, I don't want to brag. It was pretty delicious. I got to say, it turned out pretty great. So if you're interested in that recipe, you can get it at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. It's where we keep all the videos and recipes. But just to, you know, thumbnail it for you a little bit, it is, you can start off by making your own cake batter if you want to. It's a little more complicated. And I don't think it makes that much of a difference than if you just go to a, you know, cake mix, a box of cake mix, which is what I did. I got myself a nice white cake mix. I think I got Duncan Hines. I tend to like Duncan Hines, but Betty Crocker's fine. Pillsbury's fine. You know, most of them are pretty fine. I chose Duncan Hines. So it's a box of that. It's a box of coconut pudding mix. Almost all the stores, you know, where they sell the Jell-O and the pudding and all that, they will have a coconut pudding cake. So it's the one box of cake mix, the one box of coconut pudding mix. Four eggs go into it, butter, but also some buttermilk, some canned coconut milk. They probably will have that where they sell the evaporated milk, the condensed milk. If not, look in the Asian section of your grocery store. Coconut milk is used frequently in Thai cooking. And I'll bet you anything, if they don't have it in the baking section, it's very definitely in the Thai food section. It's a half can of coconut milk, which is kind of, you know, it's kind of thick. It's not like watery at all. So buttermilk, coconut milk, some coconut flavoring, which you'll find in the grocery store where they sell the vanilla extract and food colorings and, you know, all that sort of thing. A little bit of vanilla extract also is going to go in there because that makes everything more delicious. A cup of white chocolate chips. Now, they sell those already as chips, or you can just buy bars of white chocolate and chop it up yourself. Either way, because you're going to put it in the cake mix anyway and it's going to melt. So it doesn't really make any difference, you know, one way or the other on that. But a cup of the white chocolate chips and some shredded sweetened coconut. All right? So that all is going to go. You're going to, you know, mix up the dry ingredients in a separate bowl, mix up the wet ingredients in a separate bowl. When you got them all, everything incorporated in the two separate bowls, combine them. And then that's what's going to go into your greased cake pan. You can buy, you know, a white frosting if you want. I have a recipe for making it yourself, which I think is even more delicious because it's cream cheese, it's powdered sugar, a little bit of vanilla, a little bit of half and half. Did I say cream cheese? Yeah, cream cheese goes in it, butter. Oh, and that coconut extract that you put in the cake batter, you're going to put that in the cake frosting as well. A little bit goes in the cake frosting as well and mix it up until it's, you know, a frosting consistency. I forgot to mention that I made this in a Bundt pan. I guess you can make it in any kind of pan that you want to, but I did it in a Bundt pan because that's the kind of cake that Tom Cruise gives out. They are Bundt cakes. So, you know, once it's done, let it cool. Make sure it's done, flip it over, take it out of the pan, and then frost it. And then take about a cup of shredded sweetened coconut, toast it either on a sheet pan in the oven or just lightly toast it up in a pan on the top of the stove, and sprinkle the coconut all over the frosting. Kind of pat it into the frosting a little bit so it sticks. this is one of the most delicious cakes that you will have. I see why Tom Cruise gives them out as a gift. They are absolutely delicious. They're nice and light. It's a perfect springtime dessert. Probably too late for you to make today for Easter, but sometime for springtime, perfectly delicious. And again, the recipe, we've got it posted at and the video of me making it, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. All right? Here's one that's a text. Happy Easter, Dean and the WGN team. My Easter go-to dessert is grilled fresh pineapple slices. You got me right there. I love grilled fresh pineapple slices. But this texter says grilled fresh pineapple slices dusted with brown sugar, lime zest, and crushed cloves. How about that? Ooh, man, that sounds super delicious.